Today is Wednesday, January the 11th. We're going to be talking more about endocrine system today, hypothalamus and pituitary. Okay, in class last Monday, we talked about the difference between endocrine and exocrine glands. Which one of these carries a duct?
Exocrine,
good. Okay, we also talked about the difference between neurotransmitters and hormones. Which of these is carried strictly in the bloodstream?
Hormones,
good. So how do neurotransmitters get to their targets? Good, going across the synapse, good. Okay, we also talked about the difference between second messenger system or secondary messenger and direct gene activation. So obviously proteins use the secondary messenger system. Why is that?
Too
big, can't go through, good. So proteins are too large to pass through the phospholipid bilayer. Instead, they're the first of two messengers. What chemical behaves as your second messenger?
CAMP,
good. So cyclic AMP transmits the message to the interior of the cell, turns on enzymes like protein kinase A, and that carries on the wishes of the hormone inside.
What did you say was C-step
form? Cyclic. Like cycle, yeah. All right. We know steroids can travel directly through your phospholipid bilayer, and so where do they first encounter a receptor?
Inside
the cell, good. So we call that an intracellular receptor. And once it binds that receptor, it goes to a piece of DNA and activates a gene, thus the name direct gene activation. What is the end goal? What are we trying to make here?
New protein,
good. So steroid hormones include testosterone, estrogen, sex hormones fall in that category. Plus, some of our adrenal gland hormones, cortisone, cortisol, aldosterone also fall in this category. Okay, now there was an exception to the rule. There was a protein-based hormone that used this direct gene activation system. That was thyroid hormone, good. Okay, let me give you an example. Tell me which of our three interactions we're dealing with here. If we have insulin that lowers blood sugar and glucagon that raises blood sugar, we're dealing with antagonist, good. If we have glucagon that raises blood sugar and epinephrine and cortisol that all raise blood sugar, they are good. And now if, say, oxytocin has to be present in order for prolactin to do its job, permissiveness, good. Okay. And then finally, this is something we're going to work with on and on throughout the endocrine system. But if we're talking about the changing blood concentrations of glucose and how that encourages hormone production, this is what type of stimulation? Humoral, good. Now, if we're talking about one hormone telling another gland to make a hormone, that's hormonal, okay. And then if nerves stimulate the release of a hormone, that is neural. Okay, sounds like I got less response here. Sounds like this might be a little more rusty than anything else. Okay, so maybe we'll tie this into our discussion today. Okay, are you good to go with these three terms, permissiveness, antagonism? Okay, how about direct gene activation and secondary messenger? Good, okay. Judging by your answers, I think we'll work on tying this into today's content. Okay. So today's content actually starts on the top of page 6. You know, anatomy and physiology textbooks have said for years that the pituitary gland is the master endocrine gland. And people get that stuck in their heads like it's the be-all, end-all of the endocrine glands. But whoa, wait a minute. You got to back up a step. There's actually a piece of your brain tissue called the hypothalamus. That is the real control center for your endocrine system. If you've ever seen The Wizard of Oz, you know, near the end of the movie, they find the wizard behind the curtain, and he's running the whole show. And you think, wow, this little man's doing this whole thing. That's the hypothalamus. It's the piece behind the curtain. Somebody else gets the credit. That's the pituitary gland. But in reality, your pituitary is nothing without the hypothalamus. So that's where I'm going to start you today, is by looking at the hypothalamus as the controlling piece of nervous tissue that is really controlling a lot of your endocrine glands in your body. So I know this is kind of out of context, this picture here, but you may recognize this hypothalamus in here. There's the optic chiasma that's, of course, bringing optic nerves from the eyes. And then we've got the pituitary gland hanging off of a little tiny stalk called the infundibulum. So you can see it's really connected back up with that hypothalamus. But the hypothalamus is where endocrine control really begins. So on the very top of your page there, page 6, we're talking about hormonal secretion. What this means is hormones from the hypothalamus travel next door to your anterior pituitary through the bloodstream. And their job is to tell the anterior pituitary, hey, got you to make something for me. I want you to make thyroid-stimulating hormone. So a hormone comes from your hypothalamus, literally next door, and tells your anterior pituitary what to make. The anterior pituitary is linked up with the bloodstream, and now that hormone travels elsewhere in your body. But the control ultimately originates in your hypothalamus. Okay. So I want you to notice up here near the top of the screen, the hypothalamus makes two major types of hormones, releasing hormones and inhibiting hormones. Now, I am not going to test you on your ability to memorize acronyms, you know, like ADH. That's a good one to know, but nonetheless, ADH, ACTH, GnRH, GHRH, I mean, all these become alphabet soup in your brain. But there is one clue that I would make sure I know, and that is that RH, releasing hormones, IH, inhibiting hormones, are always made where? And who do they target? Pituitary. Which portion?
Anterior.
Good. This is so important that we're going to call that our first rule, and I'm going to make a note over here so we can stare at it the entire class period. RH and IH means releasing and inhibiting. They're made by your hypothalamus. It is their job to target the anterior pituitary. Just to kind of tie this in, this is a great example of hormonal control. Because the hypothalamus is controlling the anterior pituitary through hormones. Okay, so great example of hormonal control. So this is why I said hypothalamus is the worst thing to get through. This is really the most big chunk of hormones to learn. I don't know that I would necessarily memorize this. I would work with it, okay? And by work with it, what I mean is understand the relationship between the hypothalamus and the pituitary. For starters, every single one of these has the clue, right? The RH, the IH built in. That tells me something right off the bat. All of these are made where? Hypothalamus, good. They all will target, good, anterior pituitary. Now, let's be specific. If it's a releasing hormone, what is the message for the anterior pituitary? Good. Tells the anterior pituitary, hey, release this hormone. I want you to make this hormone. Okay? So let's start with the top one. Growth hormone, releasing hormone. Has a message for the anterior pituitary. The message is, hey, anterior pituitary, I want you to make growth hormone, okay, because it's a releasing hormone. That's the goal here, is to increase production. What is the message of growth hormone, inhibiting hormone?
Stop.
Yep. hey, anterior pituitary, I want you to stop making growth hormone or decrease levels. So I kind of think of them as a gas pedal and a brake pedal. The releasing hormone is kind of like the gas pedal that encourages production, and the inhibiting hormone is your brake pedal. So it's kind of like a way for us to tweak hormone production. This is classic negative feedback. Okay, so we're going to tweak the hormone production through negative feedback. Some of these hormones, we only look at the releasing one, such as thyroid releasing hormone, sometimes called thyrotropic releasing hormone. You get the hint there, right? But don't fall into the trap, because where do releasing hormones go to? Anterior pituitary. Okay, so it says thyroid releasing hormone. So let me show you the picture here. Thyroid releasing hormone comes from your hypothalamus through the bloodstream and tells your anterior pituitary to make a hormone. That hormone is going to be called thyroid stimulating hormone. Now that one hits the bloodstream and travels to your thyroid gland and tells your thyroid gland to make thyroxine. So the trap that I want you to avoid is this. Don't look at the first word there and say, oh, it says thyroid. The target organ must be the thyroid gland. Got to back it up here. Look at the big clue at the end. The releasing and inhibiting hormones, what we really want to focus on. Okay? Let's take a look at the next one. Corticotropic releasing hormone. It doesn't matter to me what the first word is. What matters is the last part, because it's made where? And its job is to target? Good. And because it is a releasing hormone, do we want to increase or decrease production?
Increase
production. Okay, so let's talk about the word corticotropic. Cortico means the cortex of the adrenal gland. Do you know where the adrenals sit?
Top of the
kidneys. Good. So ultimately, that's where the message is going to go, but it's in piecemeal. We're going to go from the hypothalamus to the anterior pituitary, and then from the anterior pituitary to the adrenal cortex. So that's the ultimate goal, excuse me, to get there, but of course, releasing hormone is our major clue. That's what we really want to focus on here. Gonadotropic, ultimate goal is to talk to the gonads, right? Okay, but the actual target organ of GnRH is not your gonads. It is what? Anterior pituitary. So in fact, GnRH will tell your anterior pituitary to make him release two hormones. They are FSH and LH. So we're just going to piecemeal it, going to have this conversation that eventually gets to the gonads. You know, the old joke is that sex starts in the brain. That's where it starts, in the hypothalamus. Without the hypothalamus turning on FSH and LH, females never make estrogen, males don't make enough testosterone. So, you know, really we can look at sterility issues, reproductive issues, sex drive issues, all that. Guess who you blame it on? Hypothalamus, yeah. Okay, the last two there, we are going to discuss both the releasing and inhibiting hormones. This one is called prolactin releasing hormone, or PRH, and then the inhibiting one. What is the target organ of both of those? Good, anterior pituitary. Now, in turn, the anterior pituitary either makes more prolactin if PRH is present, or what if PIH is present? Stop it. Yeah, so stop production of prolactin. Ultimately, prolactin goes to mammary glands and the breast tissue and encourages milk production. So, you know, we're passing the buck here. This is a great example of hormonal control. I don't know that I would memorize this list, but I would look for the clue, right? Okay, look for the releasing and inhibiting clues. That's the best thing to keep straight for the hypothalamus. Okay. I do want to mention to you that the hypothalamus also makes two other hormones. They're not releasing or inhibiting. They are oxytocin and ADH. They're abbreviated as OXY for oxytocin, of course, ADH for antidiuretic hormone. So catch the weirdness here. The hypothalamus makes those two hormones. It's lazy. It says, hey, posterior pituitary, I don't want to do anything with these. You store them for me. Okay, and so the posterior pituitary stores ADH and oxytocin in vesicles, just like neurotransmitters. And when the time is right, when the hypothalamus says go, the posterior pituitary releases these vesicles. They travel both over a neural pathway as neurotransmitters and also over the bloodstream as hormones. Okay? And so that's why these two work so quickly, is because they're traveling both as neurotransmitters and as hormones. So here's the question to look for on the test. Where are ADH and oxytocin made? Hypothalamus, good. Where are ADH and oxytocin stored? Good. And the next question to look for on the test is, what does the posterior pituitary make? Nothing. Yeah, okay, so that's the trick. Where are ADH and oxytocin made?
Hypothalamus.
So that is the question to look for. What does the posterior pituitary make? Nothing. Okay, so there's nothing being made there. It's just a storage tank for those two hormones. I'm going to start the attendance roster around. Is anybody new today? You're all old today? That's good. Okay. Just in case, I did highlight those who were not here, so. I'm just checking. Anybody still need the screen? All right, looks like we're ready to move on to page 7. Before we head there, are there any questions? Anything I can clarify for you from page 6? Clear as mud? What's the rule? Hypothalamus makes RH and IH hormones, and they target what? Good. Now, what two hormones are made by the hypothalamus that are stored in the posterior pituitary? Good. Oxytocin and ADH. Dylan, you good? Okay. So let's talk about the anterior and posterior pituitary. You may have noticed that they look a little different. The anterior pituitary is actually endocrine gland tissue. It's epithelial tissue. The posterior pituitary is nervous tissue. In fact, you'll notice it looks like just an outgrowth of the hypothalamus or an extension of the hypothalamus. So they are tissue-wise or histology-wise different pieces of tissue. The anterior is endocrine gland made up of epithelial tissue. Posterior is an outgrowth of nervous tissue directly coming from the hypothalamus. Okay? I do want to just make a side note here. This is certainly not anything on the test, but if people have headaches back behind their eyes, notice where the pituitary sits. It's sitting right here where the optic nerves cross and make that optic chiasma. Sometimes people complain of headaches, and they really can't put a finger on where it is, but it's behind their eyes. If that pituitary gland enlarges, it can press on the optic nerves and the optic chiasma, and people may have vision issues. They may first go see their ophthalmologist or optometrist complaining of eye problems. And then from there, maybe it becomes a neurologist appointment to check out the brain. But sometimes, you know, these pituitary issues don't present themselves in the way that we might expect. Now, if they do remove your pituitary gland, it can grow back. Which portion is more likely to grow back? Anterior, yeah. Why? Epithelial, yeah. Nervous tissue, you know, does not grow very well, so certainly that part probably is not the problem. It's the anterior that can grow back. And when they take out the anterior pituitary and posterior, they actually go up through your nose, they break a bone behind your nose, and they very delicately go between the optic nerves and snip out the pituitary and then remove it. I've taught at Tech since 1999, and during the time here, I've had two students have this surgery done. One had a disease called Cushing's disease, and the other one was as recent as about a year or two ago, and she had also Cushing's. She had diabetes. A whole host of endocrine issues came from having had a pituitary tumor. So not terribly common, thankfully, but it can cause a whole host of problems if you do have one. So let's take a look at the list of hormones made by your anterior pituitary. Notice that they have endings of SH or TH. SH means stimulating hormone, and TH means tropic hormone. All right, that's rule number two, right? Let's put that down.
Rule number two.
I'm just checking. Anybody still need the slide? Okay. Okay, so if you are a flashcards kind of person, this is probably a good slide for a flashcard. You know, since all of these don't have an SH or TH ending, it may require you to just memorize this list to get you started. So these six hormones are made by the anterior pituitary, and we're going to detail what each one of them targets.
Will those slides be on D2L?
They are on D2L, yeah.
Okay.
And I've got the first five slide PowerPoints on that biology website, too.
I know last semester, like my flashcards, I'd go back and look, like you were talking about going there, I'd make flashcards for the slides, too.
That's great, because this would be a perfect one for one.
Okay.
Yep.
I try to cover everything.
Yeah, this is certainly one I'd put on a flashcard.
What did you say pituitary glands?
Pituitary is made up of endocrine. Nervous, yeah, the anterior is endocrine tissue, the posterior is nervous tissue. Epithelial, thank you. Yeah, anterior is epithelial, posterior is nervous. Specific endocrine tissue is epithelial tissue.
Nice.
That probably makes more sense than saying it's endocrine tissue.
Yep.
Yep. If we want to be real specific, it's like glandular tissue, like say a sweat gland, but no duct work there. So it's meant to secrete like a gland would secrete. I'm just checking. Anybody still need this slide? So before we flip off this slide, let me just mention that you don't see anything up here that says releasing or inhibiting. There's no mention of that at all, because that was the job of the hypothalamus. These are all stimulating hormones. Even though growth hormone doesn't say it in its name, it's actually going to stimulate growth, like, you know, duh, right? Because that's what the name says. So even though it doesn't say stimulating or tropic, that's really the goal of these hormones, is to travel to some gland, organ, tissue, or cell in the body and tell it to do something, to stimulate it to do something. The word tropic technically means to bring about a change. So when you see tropic, like as an adrenocorticotropic, tropic means to bring about a change in another gland or organ of the body. So I know it looks like it's spelled like tropics, like it makes me think of nice cool islands somewhere, but this is totally different. It's pronounced as tropic, and it's a hormone that brings about change in some other gland or organ. Anybody still need the slide? Y'all good to go? Okay. So these six happen to be protein-based hormones, just a way for us to review the fact that all six of these use which system to arouse their targets? Secondary messenger. Good. That means they have to use a second messenger. And what was the name of our second messenger?
CAMP.
Good. Cyclic AMP, known as CAMP. Good. So our first one's an easy one, thankfully. Growth hormone does exactly what the name says. It tells your body cells to grow. Okay? Now, we often relate growth hormone with bones and muscles, because that's where we really see our body growth. We see the elongation of muscles and bones when we're growing up. Interesting how this hormone also targets the liver and makes the liver enlarge in size as well. You may know that the liver is one of the few organs that can actually regenerate itself. So it makes sense that it would have receptors for growth hormone. Interesting to note that the levels increase when we sleep. You know, our parents have told us to go to bed. Please go to bed. It's 10 o'clock. Go to bed. You know, begging, go to bed. That's why, because you grow when you're asleep. Now, as an adult, once you've reached your final, you know, destined height, the issue now becomes repair. So if you don't get adequate sleep, then your body can't repair itself, because your sleep is broken, or perhaps it's, you know, not on your own circadian rhythm. I know some of you work night shifts and or swing shifts, and it's very difficult to get your sleep patterns going correctly that way. And so you might think about how that interferes with growth and repair. If you interfere with growth hormone production, that's when levels rise when we're asleep. I did want to mention this to you. You probably recognize this as the cell cycle. It is during these G periods that we actually see increases in growth hormone at the cell. So in the past, we've talked about mitosis, and all the rest of this is interphase, but specifically growth hormone is active during those G1 and G2 periods. Don't you love it when something comes together? You know, they probably told you G back in Bio 210, but now you know why that's called a G period. It's actually a growth hormone period. Okay, so these may be something you want to print off as study slides. Every one of our anterior pituitary hormones is hooked up in this chain of command. The chain of command starts with your hypothalamus. GHRH is growth hormone releasing hormone. Now, what is it going to target? Good. And what does anterior pituitary make in return? Growth hormone. Growth hormone targets body cells. Good. And in response, they of course grow and get bigger. So this is going to give us the chain of command. It kind of shows you how everything links together. I didn't have a lot of room to put it on the bottom of your worksheet, but this is a great way just to kind of lay it out and study it. Put blanks in there and go back and use that as a practice way to fill in. I do want to mention that growth hormone inhibiting hormone, or GHIH, is supposed to slow down growth hormone production. So if you need to put the brakes on the hormones, the IH is the one to do it. I've got a couple of disorders for you. They're on page 8. We'll come back in just a moment. But if you'll flip to page 8 with me. You know, it's through disorders that we often figure out how things actually work and what went wrong. And so these are all issues where we have either too much hormone or not enough hormone. Just to introduce the terminology here, hypersecretion means excess, and of course, hyposecretion means not enough. So if we have excess growth hormone, it depends on the age of the person. So what is the critical age where we start to see epithelial plates harden? Yeah, 18 to 21, by 25, they're completely turned to bone, so there's no more growth up, you know, after the late teenage years. If you're going to have excess growth hormone, say, after age 25, bones don't grow taller, bones grow wider. What is the name of that type of growth? Appositional growth, right. So that's what we're going to look at with these two, giantism or gigantism and acromegaly. Pituitary dwarfism is one of 100 different types of dwarfism, but it's very specific to the fact that we don't have enough growth hormone. Let's see, gigantism can be genetic. You know, you may see families of very tall people. It can be a gene that actually activates excess growth hormone production. It can also be a tumor. Where? Pituitary, yeah. It would be less likely for you to have a posterior pituitary or a hypothalamus tumor. Why is that? Nervous tissue. Yeah, so more likely to have an anterior pituitary tumor. So we're looking at the upper ends of the 6 foot range, close to 7 feet and beyond. Throughout recorded history, there have been stories of giants that reached 12 and 14 feet. That is incredibly tall. Our current tallest man is in the 8 foot 5 range, if I remember correctly. And most of these people that have gigantism are crippled. Why do you think they're crippled? Bones aren't strong enough, exactly. So you've got people like Andre the Giant. You've got this woman, Sandy Allen, that passed away in her 50s. All of these people have bones and muscles that are stretched way too thin, and the joints can't handle 400 to 500 pounds of weight. Unfortunately, their hearts don't really grow to meet their body size, so they've got a heart that's built for a 5 foot tall person that's pumping blood for 400 to 500 pounds of body mass. So they have cardiovascular issues, breathing issues, joint issues, and that's just to start off the problems. So, yeah, a lot of these people don't live very long. He's got gigantism, but he does not have acromegaly. I want you to look at his facial features. He just looks like a really tall, normal-looking facial features, right? Okay, look at her face. Looks not really feminine, I guess you would say. And then look at his face. Really enlarged jawbone, nasal bone, frontal bone. Both Andre the Giant and this lady had acromegaly. So what was happening to their facial features? Spreading, getting bigger. Yeah. So it's not just the face that enlarges. What else? Hands and feet. Yeah. So the whole skeleton gets wider, but you really see it where there's less tissue over the bones. So of course, hands, face, and feet are going to show up with that problem. This man at 8 foot 11 was our tallest in recent history. He was born in Illinois, and he toured with the circus because, you know, if you're 8 foot 11, that's a pretty good way to make your living back in the 1930s and 40s. At 8 foot 11, he was age 22, and he had not gone through puberty. Boy, most people go through puberty before age 22, because what is the advantage of puberty? What does it do to your bones? Stops them, yeah. So he had not gone through puberty. That means his epithelial plates were still actively dividing, and all that excess growth hormone was making his bones grow longer and longer. Nowadays, we know that, say, testosterone injections would have made his bones stop growing, and he may have had to deal with acromegaly, but at least he'd stop the upward growth. Now, you know, your mom has always told you, don't pop the blister, you get infected, right? Unfortunately, he had leg braces. They caused a blister. He ended up with a body-wide infection known as sepsis, and 2 weeks later, he was dead from a simple bacterial infection. They buried him in a huge concrete vault over 9 feet long. They were scared somebody would dig him up, parade him around, kind of, you know, look at this huge skeleton. So he's buried in a concrete vault in Alton, Illinois, where he's from. He's called the Alton Giant, since he was one of our tallest people in recorded history. that's his dad next to him there. And if you go down to the beach, Main Myrtle Beach has Ripley's Believe It or Not, and you don't have to pay, but you can see his wax figure right there off the street. So, really interesting case there. More acromegaly, okay? At what age do you expect acromegaly to show up? Not in the teenage years, but or maybe 20, mid-20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, yeah. So we're waiting for those epiphyseal plates to close, harden, no more chance of lengthwise growth, and now the bones grow wider. So, yeah, by the time you're into your 40s and 50s, there's a marked change in your outward appearance. Interesting, one of the things about acromegaly is sometimes people are diagnosed with it from sleep apnea. And I don't want to scare you because sleep apnea is a pretty common thing, but people who have facial bones grow bigger back in their breathing passageways can actually block the passage of air. So that may cause things like sleep apnea. They then go get checked and realize, oh, lo and behold, they've got acromegaly going on. Here's a lady with acromegaly. Okay, now flip it onto the other end of the scale and we have dwarfism. There's over 100 different forms of dwarfism, but the one we're talking about right now is called pituitary dwarfism. These two people right here, they look like children mixed in with adults, don't they? Okay, so the problem with having pituitary dwarfism is there's not enough what? Growth hormone, right. And so during the childhood years where the bones are growing, there's not enough elongation. And unfortunately, they go through puberty and that's it. The bones can't grow longer anymore after that point. Now, nowadays, we can x-ray the hand and we're looking to see if the epiphyseal plates are still actively dividing. If they are, what can we do for that person?
Injections,
yeah. So we give them growth hormone injections. Now, we want to be careful because at some point they go through puberty and they'll x-ray the hand again and see if there's epiphyseal lines. Now what should we do? Stop the injections. Because if you continue the injections after puberty, what could happen? Acromegaly, yeah, appositional growth would increase. So it's a very, it's a timing issue there with making sure we don't induce acromegaly. I had a student several years ago come up after class. She was 5'2", and she said she was very happy with being 5'2", because at age 5, she was wearing toddler clothes. And so her parents, had her tested. They found out she was destined to be a pituitary dwarf, did not make enough growth hormone, and so they began injections from age 5 until age 14. 14, she was getting close to puberty, so they stopped the injections. And so she said she was, certainly happy growing to the height of 5'2". The alternate would be somewhere in the low 4-foot range. To be classified as a dwarf is to be under 4'7". So that's kind of where we would cap out with the growth hormone issue there. Okay, how about questions so far? So we've covered a lot of content. Let's go back and review a little bit. What is the clue word in this particular question? Working together. Any other clue words? Same. Okay. What is your answer? Good. A, synergism. Good. Okay. How about clue words here?
Opposite.
Good. So, of course, they're working against each other, and your answer is?
Antagonist.
Good. Letter B. All right, let's see. Secondary messenger system. There are two correct answers here. See if you can pick those out. How about assembled from cholesterol? Cholesterol is a steroid. Nah, not that one. How about composed of amino acids? Yeah, that's good. That's, of course, a protein. That's what uses second messenger. Let's see, how about activating protein kinases? Yeah, that sounds good. That sounds like secondary messenger. Okay, so in fact, the first one, assembled from cholesterol, this one, able to diffuse across membranes, docking with an intracellular receptor, and promoting protein synthesis, Those four describe what? Direct gene activation, good. So we've got a little mix there of both. These two, though, are the only ones that apply to secondary messenger system. All right. How you doing so far? So far, so good? Have any questions so far? Let me flip you back to page 7, and we'll go back to that list at the bottom of the page. Okay, down there near the very bottom, let's talk about the next anterior pituitary hormone. And so the next one is called thyroid stimulating hormone, or TSH for short. Like I mentioned, on the test, I'm going to give you the whole name written out, thyroid stimulating hormone, and then in parentheses, I'll give you TSH. So I don't want you to feel like you have to memorize all those symbols and representative acronyms. They're going to be written out for you on the test paper. So we get the start up here with the hypothalamus. It produces TRH, which is thyroid releasing hormone. But keep in mind, releasing hormone tells us the target organ. Where are we going with it?
Anterior.
Good. Anterior pituitary. Anterior pituitary makes TSH. TSH finally targets the thyroid gland. In turn, the thyroid gland makes thyroxine. So you can see that there's a lot going on here. It actually, to get thyroxine produced, starts up here with the hypothalamus. I know you guys are working on that rat lab this week in laboratory, so let's kind of review and tie that in with what we're doing here. If you have no hypothalamus and you don't get any kind of medication, can you still make thyroxine? No. If you don't have a hypothalamus, can you still make TSH? Nope. Right, because you got to get the message from the hypothalamus. What if you have no hypothalamus, but we give you an artificial pill supplementing TSH? Yeah, now you're good, right? So you can make TSH and you can make thyroxine. What if you have no TRH, no TSH, but we give you thyroxine pills? Can you still function metabolically? You're still good, okay? What if you have no hypothalamus, and you have, say, low levels of TSH, what impact does that have on thyroxine production?
It slows it down.
And this is a negative feedback loop. So what does this message go back to the hypothalamus and try to do? It tells it, yeah, give us more, which, you know, may be a problem if you have problems up there. Okay, so this is all negative feedback loop. Every one of these protein hormones operates off a negative feedback with your hypothalamus. All right, the next one there is adrenal corticotropic. Natalie.
You said that was a negative feedback loop.
Is
that like this whole chart?
That whole chart is negative, yeah, sure is. Okay, so our next one is a big mouthful. It's ACTH, which stands for adrenocorticotropic hormone. Boy, look at that. The first two letters there, A and C, are the biggest clue that you've got. AC stands for adrenal cortex. The adrenal cortex is the outer portion of your adrenal glands. They, of course, sit on top of your kidneys. So the TH is also a clue. That tells us what? Tropic hormones, and they're made anterior pituitary. Good. And what do they target? This one targets the adrenal glands. Okay, so that's a way to work those built-in clues for this term. Now, ultimately, the control begins with the hypothalamus and a hormone called CRH. We know that that stands for corticotropic releasing hormone. What I need to know is releasing hormone. That always targets what? Anterior pituitary. Good. Of course, we make ACTH in response, which now in turn targets the adrenal gland to make hormones. Okay. Let's think big picture here. If you have a tumor up here in your pituitary gland, you can make a whole bunch of stuff. You can make excess TSH. TSH targets your thyroid. You can make extra ACTH. that targets your adrenal glands. We already talked about growth hormone, which targets your body cells and tissues. So if you're keeping track of all the things that we can influence in your body, and a pituitary tumor can make your body grow bigger with acromegaly, it can give you adrenal gland problems, it can give you thyroid gland problems, and we're not even done with the list yet. So yeah, anterior pituitary can cause a whole host of issues in your body. All right, another one down there for us is this one. It's called GnRH from the hypothalamus. It encourages hormone production in your anterior pituitary. Specifically, these are targeting female ovaries and male testes. FSH stands for follicle stimulating hormone. How did you know it was made by the anterior pituitary? SH, good. And then LH doesn't give you the clue, but it's called luteinizing hormone. It too is made by your anterior pituitary. A few minutes ago, I joked that sex starts in the brain. This is the driving factor behind female menstrual cycles, ovarian cycles, and this is also the driving effort behind males producing sperm and testosterone. If you interfere with this cycle here, then you've got a mess, right? So we actually know how to manipulate this for females. For females, we can manipulate FSH levels and keep her from getting pregnant. Okay, so we know a little bit about how to maneuver through these hormones and how, what it can do. So ultimately, FSH and LH targets gonads, that's the name, gonadotropic releasing hormone, and they of course produce sex cells and hormones like testosterone and estrogen. All right, so you've seen enough so far to be thoroughly confused. The pattern is what you want to look for, okay? So where does control of the anterior pituitary come from? Good. What types of hormones tell the anterior pituitary to release their own hormones? Good, inhibiting and releasing hormones, good. If you see SH or TH on the end of a hormone, where did it come from? Good, anterior pituitary, good. And their goal is to target some other gland or organ of the body. Okay, one last one for this flow chart, and that is prolactin. And so prolactin gets its demands from the hypothalamus. The hypothalamus tells the anterior pituitary to either make it or to shut it off. If you want to make prolactin, do you need the releasing hormone or the inhibiting hormone? Releasing, good. If you want to shut it off, inhibiting, good. Now, for most of us, which hormone from the hypothalamus is in control? Inhibiting, exactly. If you are lactating, if you're a breastfeeding mom, then the releasing hormone's in control of you. For everybody else, males and females, the inhibiting hormone's in control. So this is kind of odd, isn't it? Most of the time, the releasing hormone says, go, make more. But in this case, the inhibiting hormone says, whoa, stop, don't turn that one on. You know, that one's dangerous, right? So only if you're breastfeeding can you produce prolactin. It does target mammary glands and breast tissue. The goal here is to produce breast milk. Okay, now interesting stuff about this particular hormone. It works in conjunction with oxytocin. What do you know about oxytocin? Uterine contractions, right. Oxytocin gives permission for prolactin to do its job. Oxytocin is kind of like, it turns on breast milk production, and then prolactin maintains milk production. That is every time a baby breastfeeds from his mother, okay? So every time suckling occurs, oxytocin turns it on and prolactin maintains the production. When the baby's old enough and he stops suckling from his mother, we just basically stop the hormones in their tracks. We no longer need oxytocin, and then prolactin inhibiting hormone will then turn off milk production, okay? So it's not immediate, right? It takes time for those hormones to learn what you intend for them to do. Okay, so most of us have PIH in control, and that keeps, of course, oxytocin and milk production turned off. Okay, so interesting stuff about prolactin. We'll talk more about that in just a moment. You ever heard of wet nurses? Gross. Okay, there's an easy way to be a wet nurse. Nowadays, women who have excess breast milk can donate that breast milk that's kind of the concept of a modern day wet nurse. But before modern times, you know, if you had a mother that maybe died during pregnancy or, you know, during labor, or perhaps had real serious health issues after the baby was born, she might not be able to breastfeed. So another woman that might be breastfeeding her kid says, okay, well, one more. And so she takes in this child and now becomes a wet nurse to that child. That's kind of how it would work, is just to tag along with the woman who's already breastfeeding. They call those like milk siblings because they shared milk from the same mother. Okay, so nowadays we know a little more about being a wet nurse. If there is adequate stimulation of the breast tissue, especially the nipple area, you can turn on prolactin and oxytocin production. So that means you're not pregnant. That means you may not even be female. But yeah, you can actually turn on milk production and get milk to start flowing if you need to be. So there are cases where women are adopting babies and they want to bond with the baby by breastfeeding the child. And through massive amounts of breast stimulation, they can get milk production to occur. I understand it's very painful and a very trying experience. It takes a long time and a lot of persistence, but you have to stimulate the breast as often as a baby would drink from the breast to get the milk to flow. So, wow. The jury is out on the next one, breast stimulation in late-term pregnancy. Some studies say that it does not have nothing to do with inducing labor, but, you know, what does the brain think if you have breast stimulation in late-term pregnancy? Babies, right? Babies are suckling, and so the hormones change, and they say it doesn't really induce labor, but the old wives' tales say it may actually have something to do with causing those hormone changes to set into effect. I do want to mention male lactation is certainly something to be concerned about. We call it gynecomastia if a male has breast tissue and lactates. We know that that can be a tumor in one of two places. Where? Anterior pituitary. Breast tissue, yeah. Breast tissue could be the other place. So either one could produce excess prolactin, or prolactin, you know, the releasing hormone could induce excess prolactin. So nonetheless, we do see that being an issue, maybe with breast cancer for males or other issues that are going on there. Okay, let's run through these review questions there. First off, what is the target organ of thyroid stimulating hormone? Thyroid gland, yep. Stimulating hormones go to the next level, so we're going to go out to the thyroid. The function of TSH is to tell the thyroid to do what? Make thyroxine, good. And of course, back it up one level, what induces the release of TSH? Thyroid releasing hormone, good. And that one's TRH. By the way, where's TRH made? Hypothalamus, good. Okay.
That's how it's going to be. So all of these, if it's releasing or inhibiting, it's going to target the anterior pituitary. But if it's tropic or stimulating, it's going to target the next organ.
Yeah. And sometimes it'll even say, like, thyroid stimulating hormone, that's where it's targeting. It's the thyroid gland. Yeah.
If it's releasing or inhibiting, it goes to that. If it's stimulating, it goes to the next organ.
Yes. Let's see, ACTH stands for adrenocorticotropic, there's our clue word, right, hormone. And so we know it's made by the anterior pituitary, but what does it target? Adrenal cortex, right. So AC is adrenal cortex. The function is to tell the adrenal cortex to do what? Make hormones, right? Okay. And of course, back it up a step. What hypothalamus hormone has control over ACTH? CRH, good. Corticotropic releasing hormone. There's that RH that we're looking for. I know your brain is awash with letters right now. I promise you, if you work with it, it'll get clear. But right now, I know it just seems like a bunch of mush in your brain. Okay, target organ of prolactin. Breast tissue, good, good. And of course, the target organ of PIH is the inhibiting hormone, and that targets the... We'll have to check our cheat sheet, right? Okay, IHs target the anterior pituitary. Okay, So PIH, PRH would target the anterior pituitary. In humans that are not lactating, is PIH or PRH in control? PIH, good. That keeps it in an off position. It shuts it off. What hormone promotes prolactin release in a breastfeeding female? Yeah, that's right.
PRH.
Yeah, in this flow path, PRH is the direct controller, but you're right, Oxy is a player there. All right, let's see. What hormone stimulates TSH production? TRH. Good, that's thyroid releasing hormone. What hormone decreases prolactin levels? PIH, yeah, prolactin inhibiting hormone. Okay. Promotes growth of bones and muscles. Growth hormone, good. Yeah, that's the easy one, right? I'm just checking to make sure nobody said GHRH, right? Because that doesn't actually promote muscle and bone growth. That only tells the anterior pituitary to do what? Make growth hormone, right? So the growth hormone is the one that actually tells bones and muscles to grow. All right, stimulates ACTH release, CRH. Good, that comes from where? Hypothalamus, good. What inhibits the release of growth hormone? Good. GHIH, which is growth hormone inhibiting hormone. By the way, where does GHIH come from?
Hypothalamus.
Good. Okay. Stimulates the release of FSH and LH from the anterior pituitary. Go you. Yes, that's right. GnRH, which is gonadotropic releasing hormone. And where do those releasing hormones come from? Hypothalamus, good. And then we actually haven't talked about the last one, but I bet you know this one. Oxytocin, good. Okay. One last one here for our review. Which of these is made by the hypothalamus? Yeah, there's two, right? Oxytocin, CRH. So that means TSH, GH, ACTH, and prolactin are made where?
Anterior pituitary.
Anterior pituitary, good. Okay. I know better than to ask if everything's going okay, so I'm just not. This is like the worst day ever of endocrine, so I know it's going to take some time to get this stuff to gel and stick. Why don't we just move on and cover the posterior pituitary? You're over the hump, by the way. That was it. That was the worst part of this chapter. So you're smooth sailing from this point forward. Okay, posterior pituitary stuff is on page 8. Now, you've got a whole week, by the way, to get this stuff to start to gel a little bit. I won't see you guys Monday because Monday's the holiday. But by next Wednesday, if there's any parts in here that don't make sense that you need me to repeat, be happy to. Just let me know where you want me to go back next Wednesday. Okay, so let's repeat the story here. The hypothalamus is in control of the pituitary. To be specific, which portion?
Anterior.
Good. The anterior is like epithelial tissue. It's glandular tissue. It makes and releases its own hormones. The posterior pituitary, however, is made up of what tissue?
Nervous
or neural. Good. Now, does the posterior pituitary make any hormones?
Stores
them, right. So it doesn't make anything, it just stores two, ADH and oxytocin. Where are they actually made?
Hypothalamus.
Good, hypothalamus. Okay, so just to kind of get a feel for things here, this is a really long axon. Down here are really tiny axon terminals, and they're sitting on a blood supply. That's kind of something we haven't seen before. But all it takes is a nerve impulse to travel the length of that axon to tell the vesicles, excuse me, in those axon terminals to release those neurotransmitters But once they're put into the bloodstream, they're not really called neurotransmitters, are they? Now what are they?
Hormones,
good. So once we get those hormones in circulation, they can travel to their target organs. So let's talk about these two particular hormones. Oxytocin is our first one. This one is made by the hypothalamus and stored in the posterior pituitary. Its target is the female's uterus and her mammary glands. This particular hormone produces uterine contractions and also tells the mammary glands to turn on milk production. So oxytocin really doesn't know any boundaries. It just says, I produce uterine contractions. That can be during menstrual cramps. That can be during childbirth. That can be during orgasm. So it doesn't matter, it just produces uterine contractions. Okay? Now, for pregnant mothers going through childbirth, oxytocin will turn on this milk reflex. So when the baby suckles, the baby cries, that kind of neural impulse tells the brain to produce more oxytocin. So it is a neurally stimulated hormone, okay? Nerve impulses release that oxytocin. We don't know of any real clear function in males because males don't have a uterus. And unless there's a tumor somewhere, we really don't see oxytocin giving males the milk reflex, although, you know, milk can be produced by a male if there's a tumor somewhere. But we do know other things about this particular hormone. This is a feel-good hormone. It's a love, bond, trust hormone. It makes you trust your partner that you're with. And so it can be released after sex, and it makes us have a trust relationship with that other person. So oxytocin, we know, is actually a brain neurotransmitter in addition to these functions. And so there have been experiments using nasal sprays to make people feel better. But there's a catch. It doesn't cross the blood-brain barrier. So squirt away, it's not going to get into your brain tissue, right? So I think if it were to work, we should all carry a bottle and snort it, you know, make us feel good.
My dad, he had a bad habit. He used to be bad about using nasal spray.
Oh, yeah.
And it burned up like the thing. He still does it, even though they told him not to. It's actually burned up, so he don't smell like he should.
Oh, that's awful.
So, like, something nasal spray, because he used it so much, so he's pretty.
It can cause damage to those olfactory receptors in there.
It's like now he's certain smells that may not bother. It's like his nose is more sensitive to certain smells that may not bother us. It would bother him. So it's like.
That's a shame. Because smell is so important.
Yeah, I mean, he can still smell, but it's still not like it should be because he kept using that. So, yeah.
Word to the wise there, right? We've got to be careful with nasal sprays.
He's proofing the message.
That's awful, yeah. Okay, new best friend, okay? You got two best friends in Bio-211. ADH is one of them, aldosterone is the second one. And you're not gonna ever hear the end of ADH and aldosterone. Almost every chapter we bring them up and discuss them, so make best friends with ADH right now because it's gonna follow you all throughout this course. In fact, the last breath I draw in here is gonna be ADH. We cover it from this chapter to the urinary system. It is that important of a hormone. So the name ADH stands for anti-diuretic hormone. Let's break that down. Anti means what?
Against.
And diuretics make you lose water, makes you pee, right? So anti-urine formation is what this hormone is for. Don't think of it as making you bloated. That's not the goal. It's just to keep you from peeing yourself like crazy. You don't want to lose your fluids. You want to retain your fluids because they help you maintain blood pressure. And in fact, that's actually a really important job of ADH, is to maintain blood pressure. Notice the alternate name vasopressin. What is vaso? Vessel. And pressin?
Pressure.
Yeah. Vessel pressure. So this one actually squeezes vessels and increases blood pressure. Okay, it squeezes vessels and increases blood pressure. So, when we talk about the heart and we talk about blood pressure, this is a particular chemical that can be administered to people who have heart issues if they need to increase their blood pressure. Notice that this particular one does not directly influence the heart. Nowhere do we actually mention maintaining heart rate here. We only mention that it helps to increase blood pressure. So if you've got somebody who's got, say, a weak heart, maybe from heart attacks or something of the sort, and they need help increasing their blood pressure, this could be an option, vasopressin, okay? So it maintains blood pressure by squeezing those vessels, increasing pressure. The main target organ here is the kidney. Why the kidney? Exactly, good. That's the major source of water loss in the body. You lose 1.5 liters of urine every day. That's mostly water. So that is the number one route for fluid loss. If you want to keep that water, you've got to tell the kidney not to let it go in the urine. So yeah, that's what we're going to do. Tell the kidney to promote water retention. Don't let it go in the pee. And that also helps you prevent dehydration. So maintaining water in your bloodstream is great for maintaining blood pressure. Okay, so we'll talk more about this issue of osmotic pressure later. This is going to be an issue when we talk about blood pressure and blood pressure regulation. But for now, we'll just kind of appreciate that osmotic pressure is related to how salty your bloodstream is. Okay, let me put it to you this way. If you have a salty bag of potato chips and a bunch of salty peanuts and you don't drink anything, you're dying for something to drink after 30 minutes, aren't you? Okay, so you've made your bloodstream really salty. That's an increase in osmotic pressure, okay? Interesting thing about ADH, where is it made? Hypothalamus, and it's released from the posterior pituitary, good. Alcohol crosses the blood-brain barrier. The hypothalamus has no blood-brain barrier. So alcohol goes to the hypothalamus and says, don't release ADH, and so it's not. It's not released from the posterior pituitary. What happens to your kidneys then?
Flush out water.
Yeah, they say, hey, ADH is not here telling me what to do. I do what I want to. All that water goes out in your urine, and now you become dehydrated, and you have low blood pressure. Okay? So ADH is basically suppressed or put to sleep when alcohol is in your system. So that explains the cotton mouth, the headache, the awful hangover the next day. It's actually dehydration from all this water being flushed out of your system. Okay, last thing for us about this one, it is a really important hormone, and there is a form of diabetes that can result from having not enough ADH in your system. This one is called diabetes insipidus. You will hear about diabetes mellitus a little later with pancreas, but this is a very rare form of diabetes. And I'll tell you, the clue word here is insipidus. The word sip is up there because these people have not enough ADH. So why are they constantly thirsty? They flush out their fluids all the time. What comes in goes right out. They have problems with dehydration. They have problems with blood pressure regulation. Thankfully, it's easy to cure because you can administer pills of vasopressin daily, and that helps a person retain water. That helps to increase hydration and, of course, blood pressure. These two symptoms go along with this particular form of diabetes. What is polyuria? Excess urine. Yeah, a lot of fluids leaving in your urine, frequent urination, and polydipsia.
Really thirsty.
Really thirsty. So you're basically a garden hose. Water comes in, water goes out. It just flushes straight through. Let me make a point here. You may want to make a note around this one. There is not a sugar problem with this form of diabetes. Okay? There is not a sugar problem here. There is not a sugar problem with this form of diabetes. That is the distinguishing factor between this type of diabetes and the insulin issue diabetes, that diabetes mellitus. Okay, so sugar not an issue here, it's just simply that you drink fluids, you pee them out, that's just the cycle this person would be on. One way to diagnose this is to have an MRI of the brain. What particular part of the brain might we look at? Hypothalamus, good. Anywhere else?
Posterior.
Good. Posterior pituitary. Yep, so that's really it for ADH. It's just, you know, being stored in that posterior portion until it's released. Okay, this is actually a really good place for us to stop. We'll pick up with thyroid next Wednesday. Do y'all have any questions for today? Have a great weekend. I will see you guys Monday, so Wednesday we'll start with thyroid gland.